Wait for it, wait for it. Welcome to the BerlinBrigade.com podcast with your host, David Guerra.
Hello and welcome to episode 25 of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. I am your host, David Guerra, former member of Weapons Squad, 3rd Platoon, Alpha Company, 6th Battalion, 502nd Infantry, Berlin Brigade. I want to thank you for taking the time to join me today on this, the latest episode of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. I hope you and yours are getting ready for the holidays because I know I am. I got no choice. I got kids. But before we really get into the holidays, there are a couple of very important dates we need to talk about. And one, more than likely, is already passed, and that's November 2nd, Election Day. So I hope everybody went out there and voted and exercised your right as a citizen of this United States. And if you're not a citizen of the United States and you're someplace else in the world, be sure you go vote when it's time for you to go vote. So, hey, that's the only way things happen. That's the only way to make some good things happen. And you know what? It all takes you. So, hey, go ahead and vote. Next is Tuesday, November 9th, 2010. It marks the 21st anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. 21 years after that fateful day when the world stopped, took a deep breath, and changed forever. Wow, time flies. The next important day is 2 days later, and that's on November 11th, otherwise known as Veterans Day. That's the day that we as a nation take the time to remember every soldier, sailor, airman, and marine that ever wore the uniform in defense of this land of ours. From one veteran to all veterans out there, I salute each and every one of you. And on that note, I thank you once again for joining me today, and now it's time to get this podcast started.
It's time for the special announcements!
As of this podcast recording, our registry count is just under 3,800 names, and we are well on our way to 4,000. Great job, everyone. Keep it up. And remember, the only way to keep it up is to sign up and get yourself out there. As always, to have your email address added, all you need to do is go into the link there, registry link, and then there is another link to go to the registry page, fill out the form, send it in. Don't forget to include your email address. It's very important. Nobody will find you if all you do is submit your name. Again, and if you want to have your email address changes or you want to be removed from the registry, all you need to do is resubmit the registry form, please. And in the comments section, put either change of address or in the case of a removal, just type in, please remove me from the registry, but we need you to fill in the form. That way, what it does is that it tracks who you are, where you're from, and basically in the form of your IP address. That way, if somebody did it on and removed you and it wasn't you, we at least have something to go by and say, you know what, you're right, it's not you, or you know what, I'm sorry, but it came from your machine or it came from your service. So really, it's strictly up to you, but just fill out that form, please. I want to invite you to check out the daily Cold War Minute Cinchcast, and that's been online since June 1st. And, 5 months now, and episodes continue daily. And you can check out the Cold War Minute on its Cinchcast page at www.cinchcast.com. cinchcast.com/Cold War Minute, all one word. Or you can subscribe on iTunes. If you got iTunes, just go up there in the search and type in Cold War Minute, and there we are. A couple more things to address before we move on. First off, I have some sad news to pass along to everyone. If you knew or served with Frederick Hawkins Jr. of Allentown, Pennsylvania, he passed away on Monday, October 11th, at his home. He was the husband of Jeanette Hawkins for 36 years. He was born in New York State. He was the son of the late Frederick and Irma Hawkins. He was an Army veteran serving in the Berlin Brigade. Frederick received his bachelor's and master's in fine arts from the San Francisco Art Institute. He was an artist and an amateur geologist, and also served on the Allentown City Council for 2 years. He was a member of the American Bull Mastiff Association and the Greater Delaware Valley Bull Mastiff Society. On behalf of BerlinBrigade.com and everyone that served in the BerlinBrigade.com, especially those that served with Frederick Hawkins, I would like to pass along to the family and friends of Mr. Hawkins, our deepest condolences. While I did not personally know Fred, I do know the kind of man he was, because everyone that ever served in Berlin served with honor and pride, and I'm more than sure that showed throughout the rest of his life after leaving Berlin. So thank you for your service, Frederick Hawkins Jr. You may be gone, but you will never be forgotten. Now, on with a little good news. It seems that the U.S. Army garrison in Hawaii, 1st Battalion, 21st Infantry, has a new Command Sergeant Major. And congratulations go out to Command Sergeant Major Mervin S. Job. He was born in Port of Spain, Trinidad, and he moved to the United States and resided in Brooklyn, New York. He graduated from Erasmus Hall High School in Brooklyn. And Command Sergeant Major Job entered the Army Reserve under the Split Option Training Program in January of 1992 and completed basic training at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and the Combat Medic 91 Bravo Advanced Individual Training at Fort Sam Houston, Texas. He later entered the active Army, in March of 1984 and completed the Infantry Advanced Individual Training at Fort Benning, Georgia. Command Sergeant Major Mervin Job has held a variety of leadership positions throughout his career, ranging from infantryman to Command Sergeant Major, of which he was awarded the Army of Occupation Medal while serving as a squad leader in 5th Battalion, 502nd Infantry, Berlin Brigade. So congratulations again, Command Sergeant Major Job. You do the Berlin Brigade proud. Thank you very much.
Take your seats, because it's time for a special guest interview!
For the episode 25 interview, we're going to do something a little different today. In commemoration of the 21st anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall, I have compiled from past interviews a few answers to the question that everyone gets asked, and that is, where were you when the Berlin Wall fell? While not every interview got added to this compilation, I do invite you to listen to the varied responses, and I also invite you to go back and listen to all the past episodes so you can get all the answers. So, in the meantime, let's get this one started. Released in February of 2008, the first guest of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast was none other than former Brigade Commander Jack D. Woodall, Lieutenant General, United States Army, retired. And here's what he had to say when I asked him that question.
I was in Korea at the time, commanding the 2ID, and I don't recall if I saw it on television right away or I got a call from General Marsh, who was still commanding the Berlin Brigade. You know, he replaced me, and then he called me and said, "Hey, the wall came down." And I was just shocked, you know, as I hadn't expected it at all. Naturally, I was thrilled because this is something that we had hoped for quite some time. But General Marsh came over and replaced me in the second ID, so he was able to give me a little bit of information about that. But, boy, I'll tell you, then when I watched it on television and saw the joy of all those people, they were able to meet some of their family once again. They were able to come and have freedom and see what we had in West Berlin, which they didn't have in East Berlin, because as you recall, as you went through Checkpoint Charlie, it was just a drastic difference in the buildings, the attitude, just everything. So I'll tell you, I was really, really impressed and really pleased that it happened.
Released in April of 2008, after a two-part interview, and the third part was released exclusively that contained Inga Nye's answer to the question, where was she when the Berlin Wall came down? Here's what she had to say.
Where was I when the wall came down? I had just come home from a contact club meeting, the German-American contact club that had its little outposts, I think mostly in Frankfurt. There was one other town, and then in Berlin. We had our meetings always on Thursday nights. And so I came home, I think it was about 7:30, and I still lived with my parents in those days. And I come home opening up the door, and when you open up the door to my parents' apartment, you'll have a little area where you take off your coats, and then there's a door that you see through into the living room, and then you'll see the television. And there's a television on, and my mom turns around, sees me, raises up her arms, and screams, "The wall is down, the wall is down, they opened the wall." And I look at her in disbelief, and I say, "What?" I said, "You're kidding." The reason why I said that was a lot of her family, or most of her family, was still in East Berlin. So we actually grew up with this divided city in both sides. We had parts of the family in West Berlin. We had most side of her family in East Berlin. So we were regularly visiting them. And now actually this idea of that the wall would be open, they could come to visit us, we could go to visit them, was just, I'm like, wait a second, I got to see these news now. So I go in there and I look at the news and I'm thinking, this can't be possible. And I thought, the world is never going to be the same. And now trouble starts. And I didn't want to share that with my mom. I didn't say a thing. She was just so overjoyed for, you know, being able to actually see the relatives and not having to go through all of that. But also, you know, of course, the victory that came with it. And I just looked at it and I thought, you know, we're going to have economic problems. We're going to have political struggles. It's all going to be there. I just instantly knew. Don't ask me how. I just knew. And so I listened to the news, and still, you know, it was so incredible. You know, nobody really seemed to believe it. And like I said earlier, you know, we were living very close to the wall. It was just 10 minutes from us, and the checkpoint down in Ruhr, towards Schönefeld Airport, actually, we decided not to go down there. There were many others that did go down there. But the situation to us seemed so unstable that, you know, we were afraid that if we go there, they, I don't know, might bring the border closer, you know, to West Berlin. They might do something stupid, them, of course, being the GDR and maybe the Soviet. So we just decided to stay put at home and watch it unfold on television. And that was just really enough for me, and I'm not a big fan of huge mass events, actually. So there were just too many people on the streets. But I thought, this is history in the making. This is absolutely wonderful. You got to go and see it. And then my dad came home at about, I think it was 10 o'clock, and he's like, gosh, you got to see this. This is crazy. He came from a meeting, I think in Wedding, a Red Cross meeting of some sort. And he was like, boy, you can't drive through the city. You know, there are just cars everywhere, and there are these trabbies and people on the streets. And he said, it's just absolutely mayhem. And, you know, so we took it all in. We went to bed. Everybody, you know, was here again, afraid that they would shut down the wall one more time. And I couldn't hear anything from my then boyfriend, because, you know, he was locked up in McNair. I think they were on red alert. I don't remember the exact status at the time. But of course, they couldn't leave the barracks, from what I remember. And please correct me if I'm not correct on that. That, you know, there's nothing worse than repeating incorrect history. And, you know, so we thought, well, we get up the next day and see what happens. Well, and I don't remember if it was the same night or the next day. The Chancellor Kohl and the West German government, made this announcement that every GDR adult would receive 100 Deutschmarks, you know, when showing their passport at the banks, and every child would receive 50 marks so that they would have some spending money and they could go and get groceries. So in Rudo, there at where we lived, we had this little strip mall, and there was a bank in it. And the lines were so incredibly long. I mean, when you come out from that strip mall, you take a couple of stairs downstairs. There's this huge area where you have a flea market, or actually a farmer's market, on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And this entire area was just crowded with people. You know, they were all standing in line to receive their money. We had the first trabbies parking in the street, and we're like, what do they want here? They're on the wrong side. You know, they need to go someplace else. It was so surreal, and you know, it just didn't seem right. Wow. And so, you know, now looking back at it, I can say, yes, I was there, and yes, it was exciting. But back in those days, oh, man, it just couldn't be. This was incredible. And interestingly enough, the same feeling of, wow, this is incredible, this is huge, you know, people are honking the horns or driving through the streets, you know, screaming and yelling and waving their arms and whatnot, the same experience I had, and everybody else who was not a San Antonio Spurs fan, please forgive me, was when the Spurs won their third championship. You know, it was just the same, you know, the clock was over, you know, people were announcing, oh, go to the next sporting goods store in order to get your championship souvenir. So we were driving down to the store, you know, and it was just the same. I was like, wow, you know, if you want to know what this was like, you know, this is what it was like. So, of course. You know,
except for the Trabants. So we're no Trabants, right?
Right, exactly. You know, it's like deja vu all over again.
Right.
And some people then even asked me, and while I was in the States, well, what was it really like? You know, what did it feel like? And I said, you know, imagine what would happen if Mexico came back and decided to take this entire area north of the border, like Texas, Arizona, you know, and so on. You know, I mean, what would you do? What would you feel like? And they look at me and they're like, oh, okay, I understand now. You know, so it's here again, looking back at it now, I'm like, wow, I was part of history. This is awesome. You know, so yeah, that's where we were. That's what we did. We celebrated the first Christmas together with an uncle and an aunt of mine who have passed away since. That was a very, very happy meeting because they were too young to actually, you know, cross the border legally beforehand, since you had to be, the ladies had to be 60s, the men had to be 65. We were able to celebrate, you know, New Year's together. And we had this couple from the company, from my husband's unit that actually stayed with us. So we had an all-international, reunited New Year's Eve party.
Mm.
And we're still talking about that, you know, because Andy and Tina Bell, I don't know if you're listening. I hope you guys are doing great. We've been thinking about you a lot. They were from North Carolina. And my husband then, you know, we had a great time together with my uncle and aunt, you know, and so yeah, and here's that smile again, you know. There was something else that I wanted to share, and I forgot about it. Hopefully it was a little flash that came back, and I thought I need to mention this. Oh, maybe it'll come to me in a little bit.
Okay, maybe. No problem. It was not until June of 2008 that we heard John Parmenter's answer to the question where he was when the wall came down.
Well, by that time, I was living near Denver, Colorado. It was something I certainly never expected to live long enough to see. I think a lot of folks of my generation just assumed that wall was a permanent part of history, just like the pyramids I had mentioned earlier. But so it didn't really have a huge effect on me. I was surprised, but I was also delighted, and it was good to see that our perseverance, the stand that started with President Truman, had taken hold, and that essentially it was a demonstration of not just our resolve but our victory in that Cold War.
We close out the summer of 2008 with Rob Pellington filling us in on where he was.
Thought about the West. It's just, I think they're making a mistake, but I also think it was a mistake when the wall came down for probably that same reason. But I do know that I felt tears in my eyes when I saw that wall coming down.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And where were you? Where were you when, and what were you doing when you first heard that
it
down?
Let me see. It was in 89, so I had to be here in Maryland. I was here in Maryland. I was thinking I might have been in Texas. See, I worked, after I got out of the Army, I worked 10 and a half years for New Jersey Bell. Then I left New Jersey and came to Maryland. And in 83, I went to work for a government contractor. And they traveled me all over the country and partly all over the world. So, and actually, that's who I retired from, was the contractor. But I almost said I was living in South Texas then, but I didn't go there until beginning in 91, so I had to be here in Maryland.
It was not until October of 2009 that we listened to Bruce Gleason tell us what the driving conditions were in Berlin on the evening of November 9, 1989.
Well, that night we got a call at the band building, and now I don't remember what day it was. Friday night stands out in my mind, but I guess we could check the calendar to see what day it really was. We got a call at the band building at Andrews Barracks in Lichterfelde, which was on Finkenstein Allee. And we got a call at the band building saying the wall's coming down, and for the life of me, I don't remember who called. The CQ answered the phone. He hung up. I don't even remember who the CQ was now. And I happened to be down there getting my mail. Dan Eason, one of the sax players, one of our youngest members, he was probably 18 or so at the time. We heard the news. We looked at each other and said, well, we're pretty sure this is not the correct. However, we better run down there and take a look to see if this is true. We called this friend of ours, Dave Slothauer, off base. He drove up in his old rusty colored Subaru. We headed down to Checkpoint Charlie. By the time we got to Checkpoint Charlie, there were probably 100 people there waiting. There were three East German guards in the middle of Friedrichstrasse standing there, and we waited around, I don't know how long we waited, an hour maybe, and nothing ever really did happen. So we drove around to the northwest a little bit, right behind the Brandenburg Gate, and by the time we got to the Brandenburg Gate, Tom Brokaw was there with the NBC cameras, and there were hundreds of people streaming through, and history was changing before our eyes.
In March of 2010, the author of the book Shack Rat, Stan Nelms, gives us his insights on where he was when the wall fell.
Well, speaking of Berlin, one of the things that when I served there, it was in 1966. I have to tell you that never in my lifetime did I think I would ever see the wall come down. I was just glued to my TV, and I guess it was 89 when the wall fell. But I'd always told everyone, I said, that wall's never coming down. And, I guess I was wrong.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Well, that was going to be my next question. Well, where were you? Where were you when it came down, and what were you doing?
Well, I was here in St. Louis. I was still working at the time, and I was amazed. And one of my in the company I worked for, we also had an operation in Waldorf, Germany, which is near Frankfurt. And I had occasion to go back to Germany, but unfortunately my timing was such that I didn't have the opportunity to go back to Berlin. But one of the things I still have on my agenda while I still have my health is to eventually get back to Berlin. I'm told that Checkpoint Charlie, which I visited quite frequently, is now a museum, and it's strange to think that I'm part of history now. But one of the great desires I have is to walk through the Brandenburg Gate. Certainly, at that time when I was there, the wall separated and we could not walk through the Brandenburg Gate. So that was, a great desire I still have. And if I get back to Germany, I'm certainly going to do that.
In April of this year, writer-director Donna Musel took some time to talk to us about her film, Bratz, Our Journey Home. And guess what? She got asked the same question everyone else before her got asked, and that was, where was she when the Berlin Wall fell?
I was in Atlanta, Georgia, when the Berlin Wall came down. I was just ending work as a lawyer for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and I was starting my career as a writer.
Okay. Now, for the past 24 episodes, you have heard me kind of answer where I was or what I was doing or what was going on. But here it is as a complete package. It was, well, 1989, obviously, November 1989. I was in Houston at the time. And all of a sudden, it was in the afternoon, early afternoon, so I think it was around lunchtime or so, I was sitting down watching TV, and all of a sudden, the special bulletin, Berlin, and my ears and my eyes, everything was focused right on that TV set at that moment. And there it was. I mean, there they were telling me that, hey, the wall basically fell. It was it. The border was open. And they were showing some live feed of people just coming across real quickly. And I couldn't make out where it was. I wasn't too sure where in Berlin that video was coming from. They quickly had a camera set up at the Brandenburg Gate. And they were just filling up with people. And it was night. And they were showing some some recorded video, some live video. And everything was just happening so fast that day. It was like, the first thing I thought of is, no, something is going to happen. Something's going to go terribly wrong, and this is not real. And this is it. This is it. Right behind these people, right behind these innocent East Germans, East Berliners, something bad is going to happen. And I was just ready for it. Now, of course, throughout the summer of 89, we were picking up activity as far as, you know, it was in the news what was going on, the people coming through Hungary and Austria and into West Germany from East Germany, the shifting of borders and what was open, what wasn't open, how they could get around, things happening in everywhere, really all across Eastern Europe and all right behind the Iron Curtain, and you could tell that things were changing. But November happened, and boom, I mean, it just hit us like a ton of bricks. And it hit the world like a ton of bricks. So that really was where I was, what I was doing, how I got notified the first time. And everything after that, just kind of the world looked different from that moment on. It was just a whole other world. And the shift, everything shifted. The focus of attention shifted away from our adversaries to another type of conflict. And we didn't know what was over the horizon. But we knew things were not going to be the same. And that kind of reassured everybody into the sense that it wasn't going to go nuclear. And that's a good thing. But at that time, I can now, looking back at it, 21 years later, it's a whole different world. And I like it. I really do. So listen, there you go. I hope you guys enjoyed this retrospective. And I hope you enjoyed listening again to old guest, and we didn't have time to put them all in there, and there's some great stuff, and there's three, four people that I really wanted to get in there, but I'm gonna let them tell their story again, but we'll talk to them soon. Other people, dear friends, General Woodall, very good friend Inga Nye, who joined me there in Berlin last year to help celebrate the 20th anniversary. I couldn't be there for the first time that the wall came down. But you know what? I was there. My family was there. We were there. And we shared that evening there with Inga. And it was awesome. And, well, we were there when the dominoes fell. And that was an even better thing. And that was awesome. So thank you again, John Parbinner, Rob Pellington, Stan Nelms, Donna Musel. Who else am I forgetting? I know I'm forgetting one other. Bruce Gleason, Dr. Gleason, I'm so sorry. Thank you. Thank you for your time. Everybody else that I had that just we didn't have time for, but hey, we'll have another time because it happens again. Bob Johnson. Who else have I got? Let's see. Ooh, who else did I forget? I know I forgot somebody else. Oh, T.H.E. Hill, Dan Souther. Don't worry. I got you guys covered too. Thank you. And future guests. Guests that have already done an interview but it hasn't come up online. Don't worry, you'll be there. So again, everybody, thank you for joining me on this, the 25th episode of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. It's the special Where Were You edition, and I hope you enjoyed it. Before we wrap up episode 25 of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast, I invite you to answer the question, where were you when the Berlin Wall fell? And you can do that by emailing the answer or leaving it in the form of an audio comment at the Berlin Brigade hotline at 413-274-4233. We'd love to hear from you. Also, please don't forget, you can always send us comments, concerns, questions, show ideas to davidg@berlinbrigade.com. Also, if you or someone you know has something to share with us, please drop me a note at that same address, davidg@berlinbrigade.com, and we'll set up a date and a time for the interview, and before you know it, you're on the show. Also, I invite you to stay up to date with the latest at berlinbrigade.com by following us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/berlinbrigade, all one word. And you can also check us out on, check out the berlinbrigade.com cinchcast at www.cinchcast, all one word, .com, cinchcast.com/berlinbrigade. And on there, we've got quick site updates and other information that needs to get out. That's where it'll go. But that's not all. You can also join theberlinbrigade.com on MySpace, or you can do what over 970 of our fellow Berlin Brigade members and supporters have done, and that is to join us on the berlinbrigade.com fan page on Facebook by following the links that are on the berlinbrigade.com homepage. All of us invite you to come and join the great conversations that, like those at Victor John Alvarez, Carolyn Rossinger Webb, Michael Hinkle, Dennis Spellman, to name a few, that are having right there. It's awesome. So if it's great Berlin Brigade conversation that you're after, or you've been lacking for some time, come on over. Join our conversation on Facebook. It's a lot of fun. Well, listen, that's about it for the 25th edition of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. I am your host, Dave Guerra, and we continue our never-ending quest for the key to the clock tower. So if you have it, please let me know. And until next time, enjoy the day of the fall of the Berlin Wall. Happy Veterans Day, and above all, have a safe and happy Thanksgiving. I thank you for listening.
Sergeant Major, dismiss the brigade! The BerlinBrigade.com podcast is a Dave Guerra production. Thank you.
Hey, Dave Guerra here, and if you made it this far into the podcast, thank you, and it's a good thing, and here's why. This little extra section is just to let you know that this holiday season, I want to do something a little special just for you. This year, the BerlinBrigade.com Christmas card will be in limited production. And if you would like to receive the official 2010 BerlinBrigade.com Christmas card, please send me an email with your name and mailing address, and you'll be on the Christmas card list. It's that simple. Just the Christmas card list. My email address is davidg@berlinbrigade.com, and please have your mailing address in by midnight, Saturday, November 20th, 2010. That way, it ensures that you get your card in time for Christmas. Again, now's the time. If you want in, here's your chance.